because we got the alternative energy. Right. Find Nuclear Free Autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Show. I'm Michaela and today we're returning to the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance meeting that was held over the weekend of 29th to 31st of August at Pitchy Ritchie Park in South Australia. The meeting is a place for multi-generational storytelling, and last week we shared some of those fantastic successes that the nuclear-free movement has had, preventing a nuclear waste dump from being established on various different Aboriginal lands and defeating the Coalition's nuclear power proposals yet again. This week we turn to the source of all these problems, uranium mining and the destruction of sacred sites, damage caused to people and communities that occurs everywhere that there is mining. We'll be hearing from Mia Pepper and Vicky Abdullah, bringing us an update from Western Australia, Kirsten Blair and Kat Beaton with some updates from the Northern Territory, and then we'll turn to South Australia and hear from Regina McKenzie and David Noonan. South Australia, the only state that's still mining uranium, and as David Noonan puts it, the scene of the crime for uranium. So let's go now to hear from Mia Pepper and Vicky Abdullah.
So the good news is there's no operating uranium mines in WA. There's lots of new nuclear threats. But in this session, if we talk about uranium, yes, yeah, so there's been four projects that were approved and they haven't advanced for one reason or another. Three of them are now really unable to go ahead. That's Yeelirrie in Vicky's country, Kintyre up in Mardu country, just on the outskirts of the Kalamilli National Park, and Wiluna, which is across two lake systems around Vicky's area too. The other one is Mulga Rock, and that's just outside of Kalgoorlie. And that one, there's no political barrier to it going ahead, except for the community opposition. The company's still trying to get funding and develop that mine. So in the meantime, in the last couple of years, Upali Upali have got native title. That's the community for that area. And in the last couple of months, they've really come together and they're getting much more support from their corporation to fight this mine, which has been really great to see. They had a big exhibition, the Spinifex People exhibition at the State Library. And that was the story of the migration across from South Australia from Maralinga, where some of that community, the Spinifex people, came west and settled just near Mulga Rock, where this proposed uranium mine is. And so there's a shared history there and story with that community from Maralinga to now this uranium mine. And so that was a really powerful exhibition. Lots of mob from Judjundara came to Perth. And they met with the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs and have started now to do political campaigning to try and stop this mine. The company Deep Yellow have some other mines that they're trying to open in Namibia, and that's their main focus. But recently the company took a group of people, Upali Upali people, out to Mulga Rock, and they're really overstating how progressed they are. They're saying, well, we're going to start mining in 2027. We've got all our mining permits and licenses, and they're really trying to throw their weight around to say that that mine could start. And there are still quite a few hurdles for the company. And one of the opportunities that we're looking at is when they release their next study to try and make a decision as a company that they'll put the money in to start the mine. We think that they will have quite a different project to the one that's approved. And so we're talking and working with Upali Upali now to try and figure out if there's a way there to get it reassessed by the Environment Department. Yeah, so that's sort of where everything is in a tiny snapshot. But the Upali Upali community were really sorry they couldn't be here. Debbie and Maria and Keita, who have been before, but they really are gearing up for a fight. They're really wanting to do more planning and start doing political outreach and building a community of support. So it'll be great for AMFA in the next year if we can stay in touch and just make sure that we can support that community, because they're ready now for this.
I think Mia and everyone, I think we should focus on Mulga Rocks from now till next year and further on. I had a few people talking to me about Toro in Wiluna, and that I just got back from Linster from our big sign agreement with Goldfields, and there are a few people in Wiluna still want to do a bit of talk about Toro, and they which they don't want that two lakes being mined. And also, I never heard anything about Yuneri, which I go out on country all the time, do ranger work. And yeah, so I'll just go around, sneak around again, like I always do. Yeah, so I'll be really happy for Mulga Rocks. We can focus on them.
And we just heard there from longtime nuclear free campaigner Mia Pepper and Jual woman Vicky Abdullah, bringing us an update from Western Australia and some really great news there. And Vicky directs us to put all our attention on the struggle of the Upali Upali people against the Mulga Rock project. And it's a real testament to the strength of the nuclear free movement over there that they've managed to ensure no uranium mines are in operation at this stage. Next up, we're going to hear an update from the Northern Territory with Kirsten Blair
and Kat Beaton.
So we'll maybe just talk a little bit about uranium with relation to the Northern Territory. And yeah, as I mentioned, I have worked for a few decades with the Mirar, whose country is mostly within Kakadu National Park and also across into Western Arnhem. And their country includes two significant uranium deposits, Jabiluka and Ranger. And yeah, I was just in the break, I was just talking with Corbyn because we were hoping to get him on the screen as well, but it's not going to work today, unfortunately. So people who were here last year will have met Corbyn Majandi and his brother Davis, who are similar to what's going on at this meeting, younger, next gen, coming up Mirar, who have really taken on responsibility for speaking up for country publicly. But over many years, so the Mirar senior women, so Yvonne Margarula and her sisters, were involved in setting up AMFA back in 1997. So Mirar have got a really strong connection with AMFA and a long history of working with everyone from around the country who are resisting any nuclear proposals. And when AMFA sort of geared up, it was at the same time as when the push came back to try and mine at Jabiluka on Mirar country. So there's a history of a bit of uranium mining in the Northern Territory, so some small mines sort of through West Arnhem and South Alligator region. And then there was Rum Jungle, which was a bit more of a substantial mine, the cleanup of which is still going on. But then the sort of big push for what the federal government at that time was hoping would be opening up this big uranium province across the Kakadu region, that pressure really ramped up in the late 70s, and the people who that pressure landed on initially was the Mirar people. So this is the grandfather of these young men who many of you have met. So his name was Toby Gangali, and he was opposed to uranium mining on his country, made it very clear to the government and the mining company they didn't want to see it happen. And the timing, it was before Kakadu National Park was built, was established, and the pressure that was put, it was really suggested to Toby and his family that if people wanted a national park and if the idea of land rights was something that people wanted to see happen, that the only way either of those things could happen would be for the Ranger uranium mine to go ahead. And so that mine was really pushed onto people with no legal option, really. And in the Northern Territory, there is now the Land Rights Act, which is sort of the best example we have in this country of actual legal land rights. And Aboriginal people who have land rights do have the option to veto a mining proposal. except if you're the mirror at Ranger. So Ranger was the exception when that piece of legislation was brought in. So Ranger Uranium Mine opened in the early 1980s, and uranium was exported from there for 40 years. And with that mining has now finished there, and the clean-up process is underway, and that's complicated and unprecedented. And there's a lot of focus, sort of technical focus, on whether or not that's something that can actually be achieved. But MIRA are involved in trying to ensure that that's the case. And that's the expectation, that the mining company will clean it up properly. But I'll just talk briefly right now about Jabiluka. Some people may be aware of that story. So at the same time as the Ranger mine was pushed through and opened up, there was pressure also for a second mine on Mirar country at a place called Jabiluka. And an agreement was actually pushed through, and it was a change of government that meant that that mine didn't go ahead. And so that was held off for, what is it, like over 15 years, something like that. And so then when the Howard government came to power in the late 90s, and Mirar knew that that would mean, the Howard government were really open about the fact that they wanted to see uranium mining happen, and they wanted to start with Jabiluka. And so the Mirar said, all right, well, this is, you know we don't want another mine in our country. We've had this one here for whatever it was by that stage, 25 years. We don't want any more of this. It's causing nothing but trouble. And so they put the word out, we'd really like people to come and work with us and help us to resist this proposal. And connected with environment groups, so the Friends of the Earth, Australian Conservation Foundation and others, and sort of began to build this campaign of resistance, which started with very grassroots, so public meetings in the capital cities, telling the story, walking around telling that story, inviting people to participate, come and help us fight this mine. And that slowly built up to, well, through lots of hard work and lots of people travelling lots of kilometres, built up to a big campaign, which for the period at the end of the 1990s, Jabiluka was a bit of a household name in Australia, and it's still seen as one of the really significant wins in the country because it was such a big proposal, and the company and the government were both so confident that it was going to happen. And in fact, over the course of the campaign, the tunnel was dug under the hill. So the mine construction started, and ore was dug out of the tunnel and stored on the site. And Mirar was still saying, no, you're not going to have this mine. We are not saying, we're not saying yes. No matter what you say, we still say no. And they just continued that pressure. And with the support of thousands of people from around Australia and the world, they just, their certainty and commitment led to a situation where by this stage, Rio Tinto owned that mine site, and a small group of Aboriginal people from the north of Australia brought the second largest mining company in the world to the table and said, you're not having this mine. We don't want this. The world is not happy with you. And Rio Tinto eventually listened to them and had to put that ore back underground and clean that site up. And the mine, the lease has only recently expired at that site. And so just in the last 12 months, the federal government have actually said, okay, we're going to put that site into the national park. And so that's where we're up to at the moment. We're just in the process of those conversations with the federal government to see it go from mining lease to part of the World Heritage Area and then a national park. So the Mirar are people who have experienced, people like Corbyn and Davis, who are in their 20s, have lived with mining on their country for their entire lives, and they know it's not, their family have told them, and they know that it's not something they want to see happen again. And they've also successfully seen off an enormous proposal, which there are still plenty of people who are in favour of mining. And this is, I guess, part of this whole push for nuclear power when there's a deposit as significant as Jabiluka sitting there. And a lot of people know they could make a lot of money out of a deposit like that. That pressure keeps coming. And that's why, even though Mirar have this legal agreement with Rio Tinto, they really want to see it put into the national park, because until that's happened, the pressure will just keep pushing.
So not my story to tell, but it's a really important story about uranium mining in Kakadu, or uranium that didn't get mined in Kakadu, thanks to a very special and senior jock elder, Jeffrey Lee, who's part of Kakadu, is Norlanji Rocks and surroundings of people that know the area. And he was under a lot of pressure. So after Ranger was in operation and Jabiluka still being pursued, a French company called Areva put a lot of pressure to mine at Kungara and offered Geoffrey Lee a hell of a lot of money, a lot of pressure on him to look at that. But it was pretty easy for him to say a big hard no, and he had a vision for Kungara, and that was for it not to be mined and for it to be put into the national park. As Kirsten said, there are all these exiled areas and they're like holes in the heart, and that place won't be, you know, right until those uranium interests and leases are completely removed. Geoffrey Lee, on his own, as a sole JOC traditional owner, managed to achieve Kungara's safety and back into the national park. So absolutely one of the biggest good news stories. There was a huge campaign about it. There's lots online to look at. He won lots of awards. But if you go to Kakadu and you go to Yellow Waters, and you might see him around, he's a pretty quiet bloke, but see him say well done, because that energy and effort and was just absolutely massive.
One of the things about the Kakadu story, I think, is, yeah, when they were drawing up the park and talking about this whole idea of the future and what the territory was going to be like, yeah, they had these three sections that was like, you can have your national park, but we're just going to keep these bits that we've got a dollar value on. And what we're seeing is that there was just no, in the vision that the government and the mining companies had for that region, there was no understanding of the fact that traditional owners would do anything other than just go, oh, okay, you're telling us what's happening, we'll just do that. They were like, hang on, you just got here. What do you mean you're drawing these lines on the map? So in for Jabiluka, for example, the whole of Kakadu, which is huge, is Australia's largest national park. It's twice the size of Tasmania. Is that right? Two of them in something. It's big. It's listed on the World Heritage List for natural and cultural values and lots of very significant things. And when the Jabiluka lease, and same with Kungara, when those leases were still legal, which Jabiluka still is, the highway goes through the Jabiluka lease, and so you're travelling through this gorgeous country, sandstone escarpment on one side, wetland on the other, and you'd go past a sign that says you're now leaving the World Heritage Area. And you're like, oh, yeah, on the map, like the landscape hasn't changed. Like there's no lines on a map for a World Heritage Area, so of course the World Heritage values continue through those leases. And traditional owners know that. They don't recognise those lines on the map in terms of which parts of this country are important to them or otherwise. And so from the perspective of Mirar and the other traditional owners for whom Kakadu has come pretty recently, you know, in the last couple of decades, the last couple of generations is the time that Kakadu and uranium and tourism and all these kinds of things have been imposed on their country. And the reality is that Mirar and JOC and all the traditional owners across Kakadu will easily and very soon outlive the uranium era. That's a really short window. This is the country where there's evidence of continuous occupation for 65,000 years. You know, uranium mining's been this little blip, like one or two generations, and it's been a really hard fight, and the people who've been alive for that time, it's been very significant, and it's not over yet. There's more to be done. But it's so clear that this is just the latest thing to deal with. And people will keep fighting, and it's had a big impact on families, similar to what we've heard from Regina earlier. But people will withstand it and take heart from others who've had wins, and also are really aware that having these wins is an inspiration to others and a reminder that you can stand up and say no and actually win. And sometimes when you're deep in it, and everyone here knows that, sometimes it can feel like you might not. But, you know, if you haven't stopped and given up when they've dug a kilometre and a half underground into your country, you're still not going to stop and say, oh yeah, we give up, then, you know, it's a pretty good indicator. These people are taking this stuff seriously and they're just not ever going to say yes to it. So when people say no, maybe eventually the government will realise that's what they mean. They won't bother going through the fight. But at the moment, we're all here, we'll all stand with people when they do have to have those fights. So, yeah, the Kakadu story is a big part of that.
You're tuned to The Radioactive Show. The program's produced in the studios of 3CR on unceded Kulin lands and broadcast across the continent thanks to the Community Radio Network. Today we're bringing you more recordings from the Australian Nuclear Free Alliance meeting held at Pitchy Ritchie from the 29th to 31st of August. And we've just had some really great stories of the success of long-time struggles and sharing sharing those intergenerational campaign stories that the Alliance is continuing to carry forward, and so important to hear of all these examples where we've been successful at stopping uranium mining. In this next section, we are going to head to South Australia, and this is the only state where uranium mining continues, and there are plans for massive expansion of uranium mining. So we're going to cover a little bit of it here with some updates from Adnya Mutna, woman Regina McKenzie, and also David Noonan, who is an incredible, long-time environmental campaigner based in Adelaide. So let's hear now from Regina.
Just up the road here at a place called Martinswell, Wurriyelpa, and up into Framdown. You all heard about, everybody knows about the uranium mine, and also that you've got on the other side of the lake, you've got Olympic Dam. You're like, South Australia's got a lot of uranium mines. At the moment though, up in Wurriyelpa and Martinswell, and in Willapa and Framdown, they're actually wanting to put another 4 more uranium mines. They're actually all leaching. Back when you come down into Martinswell, they want to start drilling into the paleo channels so that they can, because it's going to be exactly the same what they're doing at Beverly Uranium Mine. Now, with Beverly Uranium Mine, I've been up and I've seen that place. They've got pipes that leak like, it leaks like crazy. They've had so many leaks back into the water table, it's not funny. It's just, they don't tell anybody. But the thing is that where they're trying to put this other area is there's a place called Arapina. Arapina water roll is actually linked. The paleo channel that goes through, runs through and comes through our water report that we've done on Orkna, connected. That area also goes into what they call the Wilpena Power water catchment area. So that if there's any problem, if they do, just say if they did hypothetically put a line there and that there was any leaks and stuff into that water and into the water table down in underneath, that's all Wilpena Pound and everything gone. You know what I mean? All that water and stuff and water that we drink, because we don't get water from thing. We get our water, we get from bores and stuff. That's all going to be affected. And, you know, this area cannot sustain anymore. The Flinders Range cannot sustain. It can't sustain Beverly Uranium Mine, let alone having another 4. It's like, I'm pretty sure they're thinking about opening up White Dam as well, talking about that area. But, you know, all these areas and stuff they're talking about, well, what I'm talking about, because I talked to Dave about it, what my sister sent that message to you. Last week, we buried my older sister, Angelina. She was born out by Wurriyelpa and Weavers. Before she found out that thing they were going in their mind, she was actually, like, she was 85, but she was doing really well with their health. When she found out it was going in on country, every night she'd ring me and cry. And then within 2 months, I actually lost my big sister because of this poxy nuclear mining. This is what they don't realise, it takes people. And, you know, I lost my older sister, my yucca. And I lost it because of what they're doing up there. They're going around with, they say that they talk to the community. Community is 5 people. Go around with 5 people from the Argument the Tribe who's thinking about money, money, money. They never bring them things back to the Argument community. They've stopped having meetings with the Argument people and stuff. And that's because every time they brought it up, the Argument say no. It's just, it's really hard with what's been happening and stuff up in that area. But this country cannot sustain. It's a semi-arid desert. The water and stuff that we need and stuff, and water is life. And they're gonna destroy the country. And I'm just worried about, not just me as a human being, I'm worried about the animals and stuff in this area. You know, up near Beverly and stuff, you would find that nobody won't go getting munges or anything near Beverly because they've got cores and stuff on them that's come lately since that big uranium mine. It is impacting the whole country, and it's thrown down, coming back down into where the country is. It's not going to sustain it. And what we've got to start doing, like if you go over to, onto the other side, they've got they've also talked, BHP is talking about doing Arkuna, or what they now call Oaks Dam. Now, we all know about Olympic Dam. This new one makes Olympic Dam look like kindergarten. It is massive. The size of the area that they want to go is massive. The thing is that everybody complains about Olympic Dam. There's something's popping up even bigger than Olympic Dam over there, and that's Oaks Dam. The way they're doing it is that it's going to make it hard for us to fight because it's they've got so many things that it's spreading us thin, but that's why we need to get more people in on it. And I'd just like that, like to know, like the area and stuff, I'll send information and stuff about their explorations and stuff to you guys, but of their maps and stuff, they stupidly sent it to me. You know, we're going, they're already ringing us up. They're ringing my sisters and stuff up. They're harassing people a week after we buried her sister. You know, she told them no. Now they're harassing us. And, you know, in culture way, that's wrong. Because even though it was a week ago, we're still in mourning and stuff. But, you know, I'm here because she made me come here. Before she passed away, she said to me, you've got to get, because she knows Dave, you've got to get Dave and everybody in on this. She said, I want them to stop that thing. She said, I'm not going to be here. She said, but I want that stopped. Mm. You know, yeah. And that's what people don't realise. It kills people.
So ANFA started as the Alliance Against Uranium. South Australia is the scene of the crime for uranium mining, the only state and territory left who's still digging up, processing and selling uranium on around the world. Predominantly that's BHP, the world's largest mining company that bought Olympic Dam, the Roxby Downs copper uranium mine 20 years ago in 2005. And through BHP, South Australia sells uranium on to nuclear weapon states. We sell uranium on to unstable regions. We sell uranium into the Middle East, to the United Arab Emirates. We sold uranium into Ukraine in a border dispute with Russia, and we know more recently how that turned out. We sell uranium on that always becomes nuclear waste somewhere around the world. If it's not contributing to the weapons side, it's always contributing to the waste side. And BHP promote Roxby Downs, saying it's a top 10 global uranium mine, 2,300 tonnes of yellowcake in the last year. And they plan to continue to do that at some significant scale for the next 50 years, they say. There's already over 100 million tonnes of toxic tailings at Olympic Dam, ground to a fine powder, readily erodible by wind or by water. It's hazardous for, you know, 10,000 years plus. It's in cheaply designed and unstable tailings dams, storage tailings dams. And that they call that material low level, but it's certainly the longest possible time hazard to country.
But that's why they don't let, when the north wind and that blow, that's why they don't let anybody out on site.
Big BHP spray water on top of the tailing piles to keep the dust down during wind, yeah. That's part of the management process. So we have a couple of major aims. One is to scale back and prevent new uranium mines and expansions. And the other is to get respect and recognition for traditional owners' rights and interests, including free prior and informed consent, which is a right to say no to mining projects, to uranium mining projects, and particularly to respect Uncle Kevin Buzzacott's plan and his lifelong plan and intention to get Olympic Dam mine off taking a Greater Titian Basin water to gain protection for the unique and fragile mound springs of significant and ongoing cultural and spiritual importance to Arrabunna and other Indigenous people, and also of significant ecological importance. It's a listed endangered ecological community, the Mound Springs, and they're one of the natural gems of South Australia's heritage. I'd like to give you a quick outline of what's going on and what has changed in the last few years around Olympic Dam, and a couple of key aspects that will lead into the state election window in March next year, where we may be able to get a little bit of movement, particularly on the water issue that Kevin wanted. In about 2021, BHP significantly changed the game for what their plans were for Olympic Dam. They'd had two major mine expansion projects that had failed, they'd had to pull back from. They'd planned the world's largest mining open pit in the Southern Hemisphere back from 2007 till 2011. It was fully approved by the federal and state governments, yet BHP pulled the plug on it in 2012, saying that they had other ways of spending their money. They tried a major underground mining expansion at Olympic Dam in 2019-20. Again, they pulled back from that, saying that at depth they found through drilling that the ore wasn't as consistent as they thought it was, and it didn't suit their economics. Now, they had to admit by 2021, and the state Liberal government at the time came out and said it publicly, that they won't allow increased volume or level of extraction of water from the Great Artesian Basin. They wouldn't agree to take, the state government wouldn't agree for the company BHP to increase the volume of their extraction from the GAB. And that has led the company to, and the state government to, a major second round of major marine desalination proposal. What BHP really did with Olympic Dam was they switched from trying to get big expansions on the site. They are still trying to expand the site, particularly through what they call the southern area. There's a new mining decline, a tunnel being built at Olympic Dam now to gain access to the ore in the southern area of the mine site. What they did was they switched the plan to make Olympic Dam a regional processing hub for copper uranium ores from mines around the region. So they have multiple expansion proposals now. They have the massive new Oak Dam mine proposal that has been raised, where they propose to mine down below 800 metres at Oak Dam. Oak Dam's a site about 65 kilometres southeast from Olympic Dam. So they wish to mine at Oak Dam and process millions of tonnes of ore, copper uranium ore, back at Olympic Dam. They bought up Oz Minerals, two other copper mines in the region, and they have expansion plans for both of those mines. They're also considering further deep drilling, what they call Olympic Dam Deep, at the site. So there are multiple expansion proposals.
And that was David Noonan, and we're going to hear more about the plans for expanded uranium mining in upcoming shows. And before him, Regina McKenzie. To find out more about the Nuclear Free Alliance, you can go to the website anfa.org.au. You can find our podcasts on the website 3cr.org.au/radioactive. Thanks so much to the Nuclear Free Collective at Friends of the Earth Melbourne for the ongoing support. And to sign up for the newsletter and get regular updates, go to melbournefoe.org.au/nuclear. Thanks so much to the Community Radio Network for getting this program out to community radio stations across the continent each week. That's all for today's show. Tune in again next week for more news and views on nuclear peace and energy issues.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.